It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
It was early Sunday morning around 3:30. People were eating inside a Waffle House when a lone, naked gunman armed with an AR-15 began shooting at them. Before police could respond, 29-year-old Travis Reinken killed two people outside of the Waffle House, then went inside where he gunned down two more victims and wounded four others. Frequent Waffle House patron Chuck Cordero saw the rampage take place after pulling into the parking lot.
This guy in a pickup truck pulled up, gets out of his vehicle, and wearing nothing but a jacket, and shot some guy right at the door. And then he shot my buddy who was trying to run down the sidewalk. And then I dropped to the ground around my car. And then I could see from underneath my car, there was a guy inside wrestling with the gunman. And then it just got quiet. And that's when the gunman had taken off.
That guy wrestling with the gunman was customer James Shaw. Fearing for his life, he took a dangerous chance to pounce on the shooter to wrestle the gun away.
At the time that he was either reloading or the gun jammed or whatever happened is when I ran through the swivel door. I hit him with the swivel door. I managed to get him with one hand on the gun, and then I grabbed it from him and I threw it over the countertop.
The life and death struggle continued with Shaw fighting with Reinken all the way outside. And at that point, Reinken was able to break free from him and run away. Police are now conducting that massive manhunt to capture him. Now, this is not Reinken's first run-in with the law, however. Last July, he was arrested by the Secret Service for trying to enter a restricted area near the White House in August. Police seized four weapons he owned. Somehow, those weapons got back. Possibly through his father, they're saying.
Okay, that was Kelly Wright of Fox News. And that's, I always think when it's life and death, those are the most important stories of the weekend. Sandy Rios, back with you. This is, you know, four people actually were killed in this and four others wounded. And right now, my understanding is that Nashville is on lockdown because he's still on the loose. He's still out there and he's got other guns. And as you heard Kelly say, this Travis Reinken, 29 years old, had at least three different guns. He was rested at the White House last July, at least in the area around the White House, the restricted area. And at the time, the FBI then requested that his guns be taken away from him. I don't know if they revoked his license. I'm not sure about that, but they took the guns away. The father, to confirm what Kelly just alluded to, the father of Travis Reinken gave him his guns back. Boy, there's going to be a story there. Don't you know it? And there are other reports of him. They said in Illinois last fall, it was in the summer in Tremont, Illinois, last June, he jumped in the water wearing a pink woman's coat over his underwear. But at the time, he had an AR-15 rifle in his trunk. Just a bizarre behavior. It sounds like mental illness. I don't know. But of course, one of the most interesting stories out of all of this, besides the tragic loss of life, four people are dead. Four people at the Waffle House near Nashville, Tennessee, are dead as a result of whatever, just the wickedness that seems to be coursing through America's veins right now. James Shaw, you heard Kelly refer to him, but I want you to hear a little bit more of what he had to say. He's the guy that stopped the shooter. He stopped him when he went inside, pushed a door in his face, and actually fought with him, grabbed the gun, the hot gun. The barrel of the gun burned his hands as a result. And this is what James Shaw had to say in part.
And then when he proceeded to come in, I actually went behind this like a push door, swivel door. And he shot through that door, I'm pretty sure. And I'm pretty sure he grazed my arm. And it was at that time that I kind of made up my mind, because there's no way to lock that door. That if it was going to come down to it, he was going to have to work to kill me. So at the time that he was either reloading or the gun jammed or whatever happened is when I ran through the swivel door. I hit him with the swivel door, and then the gun was kind of jammed up and it was pushed down, so we were scuffling. And I managed to get him with one hand on the gun, and then I grabbed it from him and I threw it over the countertop. And then after that, I was trying to get out the door, and I think he was pretty much in the entranceway, so I just took him out with me, out of the entrance and all the way outside. And then I proceeded to run around, and he had like a walk, trot, pace type of jog that he was doing, trying to get away. And that's kind of what happened.
And after that, he paused and kind of got emotional. That was James Shaw. Now, James Shaw is black and 29. Travis Reinking is 29 and white. And the only reason I mention that is that if this isn't a reminder to each and every one of us that wickedness is colorblind and we really are the same before God. There is wickedness running and coursing, I used that term already, but coursing through the veins of people of every color. It has nothing to do with color. And so I just think this is a remarkable story and a sad story. And we're going to hear, of course, more about this. Travis Reinking, I'm sure we'll hear about. He must be mentally ill. What else could explain the things, the odd things that they have? He did this naked. He had just a jacket on. Just strange, very strange, unless it's drug addiction. I don't know, but we'll find out as more information comes out about this. I want to just take a pause to thank you so very much for your generosity at Share-a-thon. Wow. You know, the last time I was on live with you was Thursday. We had pre-taped the show on Friday. And we were asking you to call, and we started out with some sort of a goal of 300 calls or some such thing. And would you believe that we made almost 1,000 calls, if not 1,000? I mean, it's just you guys were just absolutely, as you always are, generous beyond measure, unbelievable. And so I just want to thank you personally for your contributions to the American Family Association, to American Family Radio, and honestly for your personal encouragement to me. That was just a great. Fred Jackson hosted with me. We had such a good time, and it was and my staff too, Adam and Rob. It's encouraging for them to have you respond in that way. It's just amazing. And so God bless each and every one of you. I want to read. I got it. This email. Just wanted you to know we are supporting your show and of course all of AFA. We love you. We love the truth. The Goochland Tea Party, and Goochland is down there. This is the Tea Party. In part, they gave us Congressman Dave Brat. And they're faithful listeners down in Virginia. And they're faithful supporters, too. God bless them in every way. Fred wrote me after the show, and he said, I had a voicemail in my office from a lady in Oklahoma who tried to get through, but the lines were too busy. She said she would be sending a check for $150, to our accounting department for Sandy and Fred. Anyway, so that was just sweet because we, and then what else? You would probably want to know what happened. I think we have a total number of pledges, which is about 14,000. But of course, we could use some more because AFA has endless amounts of, you know, the work is great. It's just huge. We set goals. Because just like the calls on the first hour, we set it at 300 and we made 1,000. You know, God has different things in mind. And so there are so many things that American Family Association can do with your faithful contributions. And we'll do it. And with the money that you've already pledged. And if some of you didn't get a chance to do it, go to AFR.net. That's AFR.net. And you could still make a donation online. And of course, we will be so grateful to you. Well, over the weekend, there was a big event, and that was the funeral of Barbara Bush. I think four past presidents. It was George W. and George Herbert Walker Bush and President Clinton and President Obama and Michelle, Mrs. Clinton, and then alone by herself, Melania Trump. President Trump decided not to go to that funeral, which, you know, when you think about the way he took on Jeb Bush during the campaign, I think the Bushes would not have wanted him there. And that's probably why he, I'm just guessing. I'm sure he's kind of busy, too, given all that's going on. Melania went by herself. CNN had a kind of a little interesting report. I'll just play a little bit of it as Melania walked into the church. Let's listen.
There's Melania Trump, the first lady of the United States. I want to bring in Kate Bennett, who's watching this as well. She's actually going to be seated, Kate, directly next to the Obamas, right?
That's correct, Wolf. The First Lady has not seen or spoken to Michelle or Barack Obama since Inauguration Day. So since that sort of that exchange that Michelle Obama joked about on the Ellen Show, where Melania Trump handed her that Tiffany box and she didn't quite know what to do with it. Melania hasn't seen them, and she'll be sitting next to them today at the funeral.
And you see President Obama and Michelle Obama. You see Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton walking in as well.
Okay, so that the point is that you see, if you've seen that clip, which you probably have because I saw it on Twitter, and that you see Melania sitting next to President Obama chatting and or at least laughing, responding. The Daily Caller put it this way. While Melania attended the funeral alone and was surrounded by her husband's political opponents, she was the beacon of class. Melania stood proud, smiling and waving at those in the audience. Multiple times she could be seen laughing and creating polite conversation with her husband's predecessor, Barack Obama. You know, they said about Michelle making a joke. Michelle was mocking Melania Obama on the Ellen DeGeneres show. And so yet Mrs. Trump sat there with great dignity. I want you to hear Jeb Bush made a really beautiful tribute to his mother. And I thought you could at least listen to part of it. Let's listen.
Barbara Bush filled our lives with laughter and joy. And in the case of her family, she was our teacher and role model on how to live a life of purpose and meaning. You see, our mom was our first and most important teacher. Sit up, look people in the eye, please say please and thank you, do your homework, quit whining and stop complaining, eat your broccoli. Yes, Dad, she said that. The little things we learned became habits, and they led to bigger things like be kind, always tell the truth, never disparage anyone, serve others, treat everyone as you would want to be treated, and love your God with your heart and soul. What a blessing to have a teacher like that 24/7. Now, to be clear, her students weren't perfect. That's an understatement. Mom got us through our difficult times with consistent, take it to the bank, unconditional, but tough love. She called her style a benevolent dictatorship, but honestly, it wasn't always benevolent. When our children got a little older, they would spend more time visiting their Gampy and Ganny. All it would take would be one week, and when they came home, all of a sudden, they were pitching in around the house. They didn't fight as much, and they were actually nice to be with. I attribute this to the unbridled fear of the Ganny lecture and the habit-forming effects of better behavior taking hold. Even in her 90s, Mom could strike fear into her grandchildren, nephews, nieces, and her children if someone didn't behave. There were no safe spaces or microaggressions allowed with Barbara Pierce Bush. I hope you can see why we think our mom and our dad are teachers and models for our entire family and for many others. Finally, the last time I was with her, I asked her about dying. Was she ready to go? Was she sad? Without missing a beat, she said, Jeb, I believe in Jesus, and he is my Savior. I don't want to leave your dad, but I know I'll be in a beautiful place. Mom, we look forward to being with you and Robin and all of God's children. We love you.
Wow. Jeb Bush, in tribute to his mother at St. Martin's Episcopal Church at her memorial on Saturday. Is that not a blessing to us all to hear that? The eternal life that God offers and offered in Barbara Bush, the impression that she made on her kids and her grandkids. It was a wonderful time. But funerals can be absolutely wonderful. You know that? When you know Jesus. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Did you know George Washington, the father of our country, he loved being at home at Mount Vernon? In fact, he said, He'd rather be at home in Mount Vernon than dining with all the princes and royalty of Europe. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. We're going to Mount Vernon on our spiritual heritage tour in September, and we'd love to have you join us for this very special time. Stephen McDowell of the Providence Foundation will be with us as we go all over our nation's capital. We'll go to the Capitol, the Library of Congress, the World War II Memorial, the Lincoln Memorial, all the places you want to see in our nation's capital. We'll see that, but we'll also go to Mount Vernon. Now, for all the information on this September tour, including a side trip to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown, you can check it out at spiritualheritagetours.com. Spiritualheritagetours.com for all the information on our September tours. And we'll see you then.
The influence of media is so very powerful over a person.
American Family Association and the family of Anna Bright want to warn you about the Netflix program 13 Reasons Why.
I really feel in my heart, with all my soul, that that show contributed to her passing.
After binge-watching season one of 13 Reasons Why, 14-year-old Anna Bright committed suicide in the same manner depicted on the show.
To portray suicide, first of all, as an option, is not a good thing. To portray it graphically, it leaves you vulnerable to the enemy's attack, which I think it definitely did for our daughter.
She took a permanent solution to a temporary situation.
Help protect our teens by signing the AFA petition urging Netflix to pull Season 1 and cancel the upcoming Season 2 of 13 Reasons Why. You can see Anna's story and sign the petition at AFA.net. That's AFA.net.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Paul Kizito. I'm a junior biology major here at Truett McConnell, and I came from Uganda. What I love about TMU is number one is the heart of, you know, of just the school and the love for God, for Christ. You can see it once you step on the campus. Like, you can see it's best, like, the foundation for TMU is Christianity.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
When social justice warriors started toppling Confederate war monuments, I delivered a stark warning on this radio station. I warned you the cultural cleansing of America was only just beginning. And sure enough, people began targeting George Washington and Thomas Jefferson, calling out our founding fathers for owning slaves. It did not seem to matter that Thomas Jefferson proposed ending slavery, just like it did not matter that Robert E. Lee spent the final years of his life reuniting the nation. And that brings me to the latest movement led by Native American activists demanding that one California town take down a monument honoring President William McKinley. They say McKinley supported policies that led to the murder of Native Americans. The town council has already voted to remove the statue. So it's only a matter of time before another piece of American history is erased. I'm Todd Stearns.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
No more of these for now. That's the stunning promise from North Korean leader Kim Jong-un with his surprise declaration to a ruling party meeting that the isolated nation will suspend all nuclear and ballistic missile tests effective immediately. And with a flourish, Kim added he will actually abolish a nuclear test site. The nuclear test site has done its job, he said.
This is an extraordinary announcement from the North. We have never seen any kind of movement like this, any kind of concessions in the history of North Korea.
President Trump greeted Kim's announcement with glee, tweeting, "This is very good news for North Korea and the world. Big progress. Look forward to our summit." That summit, tentatively set for late May or early June, a likely factor in Kim's decision as he tries to show flexibility. But many analysts warn there's less to this move than meets the eye. It's not a permanent halt to testing, just a suspension. And North Korea has already achieved much of its nuclear and ICBM goals, with missiles believed to be now capable of reaching most of the continental United States. The key question to any denuclearization deal with North Korea, can they be trusted?
The U.S. is going to be naturally skeptical of any North Korean statement. They have broken every treaty. They have broken every promise that they've ever made to us and to the South Koreans. So this will not just be trust but verify, it will be distrust but verify.
All right, that's a report from ABC News, and that is huge news. That's huge news. That North Korea would even say that. You know, you think about the bluster of Kim Jong-un and of his father before that, Kim Jong-il, and how they would just thumb their nose in the face of the United States every time. We've watched them play these games for at least 20 years. And while they dangerously build their nuclear weapons in the background and claim they're using it for some other purpose, we have bought them off time and time again. As I have explained, they are duplicitous and untrustworthy. But I think that this president understands that, and there'll have to be, you know, some sort of real provision made to make sure that they do exactly what they say they're going to do, as opposed to other administrations who just, you know, make statements, public statements, but don't put any teeth to the enforcement. I think it's going to be different this time. Makes all the more important this whole business about Mike Pompeo being nominated as Secretary of State. Rex Tillerson, of course, is gone. Just reading an interesting report about him, which I don't think I'm going to take that detour, but let me just say that some people felt he was not doing the job he should have been doing. In other ways, I thought he was at least competent. Not sure. Mike Pompeo is the new nominee. He is going to be, has to, you know, get a confirmation just by simple majority. He has to pass out of the committee first, the National Security Committee, and then he has to be voted on the floor. But it's not that easy. We played for you his back and forth with Cory Booker in the hearing last week, where he was asked if he thought gay sex was a perversion and other things that he had been quoted as saying in his as a congressman from Kansas. And he basically said, "I treat everybody equally." That's basically what he said in that exchange. But here's the thing. Mike Pompeo has been to North Korea. He was working with them secretly, I think it was last week, without anyone knowing. And one has to say, whatever you might say about Mike Pompeo on anything, that's an amazing achievement. But now he's under danger in the Senate about whether he will actually be confirmed. Rand Paul will not vote for him, at least not so far. And there are others. The thing of it is, there are a lot of Democrats who are in, you know, Trump-supporting states who may have some trouble if they don't vote for Pompeo. We just don't know how this is going to go. We're not sure that he has the number of votes necessary to get out of the committee. And so some have said he can easily win a simple majority. Not easily, but he can win a simple majority on the floor of the Senate. But that remains to be seen as well. So Joe Manchin, Joe Donnelly are undecided on Pompeo because, you know, they're not sure about whether they should vote with the Democrats or whether they should pander to their Trump voters in their state. So I'm not sure what's going to happen here. I think there are moves underway, of course, too. The Democrats are playing some big games. There's a whole article about it this morning from, I believe, it's written by Alexander Bolton. I'm not sure the outlet. It might be The Hill. And he said that there's a plan under consideration that would involve Democrats on the panel refusing to vote to discharge Pompeo, who is currently the director of the CIA. But basically, without going through all these procedures, what they would force is changing the way and the rule under which he's voted on so that it can be filibustered, so they could stop it. And that's part of what they're trying to do. It's just, you know, it is what it is, isn't it? So this is what's happening with that. I want to address, this is from a listener, and I want to pause just to go to this for a second. Kathy has been listening to this show. I've heard from her so many times since I've been on the air here. She says, "I listen to your show every morning since your first broadcast, and I trust you explicitly and never backing down on faith and Christian values. Here is my problem. It seems Mike Pompeo waffled and crumbled very badly at the question of Booker." And Adam, while I'm talking, why don't you look that clip up that we used last week, the exchange between Cory Booker and Mike Pompeo. We might want to refer to that. Mike was asked a very specific question, and I felt a very easy one. He was asked if he believed homosexuality is a perversion. This is a very important question, which could simply be answered by just the definition of what perversion is. What bothered me was how all of you stood up for Pompeo about his answer instead of voicing your disapproval of what he answered. All he said was, "I treat everyone the same." And then she says, I trust you in your judgment. For the life of me, I can't understand why you did not express your disappointment with Pompeo's answer. And then also to say he was persecuted, badgered maybe, but not persecuted. All Pompeo would have to had to say was any various means of sexual gratification that is generally regarded as normal is perversion. Homosexuality is a perversion of the sexual act between a man and a woman. Homosexual marriage is a perversion of traditional marriage between a man and a woman, and it's a perversion of marriage. I need to hear your reasons why you stood up for him other than his claim to be a conservative Christian. You cannot stand up for someone who does wrong just because he claims to be in the same camp as he was tested, I believe, right there by God, and he failed the test. All right, how long is that clip, Rob? Okay, well, let's listen to the exchange, and then I'll give my comments.
You said in a speech that mourning an America that endorses perversion and calls it an alternative lifestyle, those are your words, is being gay a perversion?
Senator, I when I was a politician, I had a very clear view on whether it was appropriate for two same-sex persons to marry. I stand by that.
So you do not believe it's appropriate for two gay people to marry?
Senator, I continue to hold that view. It's the same view.
And so people in the State Department, I met some in Africa, that are married under your leadership, you do not believe that that should be allowed?
Senator, I believe it's the case we have married gay couples at the CIA. You should know I treated them with the exact same set of rights.
Believe that gay sex is a perversion? Yes or no?
Senator,
do you believe that gay sex is a perversion? Because it's what you said here,
Senator,
in one of your speeches. Yes or no? Do you believe gay sex is a perversion?
Senator, I'm going to give you the same answer I just gave you previously. My respect for every individual, regardless of their sexual orientation, is the same.
So I will conclude by saying,
if I'm confirmed,
I will conclude by saying, sir, you're going to be Secretary of State of the United States at a time that we have an increase in hate speech and hate actions against Jewish Americans, Muslim Americans, Indian Americans. Hate acts are on the increase in our nation. You're going to be representing this country and their values abroad in nations where gay individuals are under untold persecution, untold violence. Your views do matter. You're going to be dealing with Muslim states and on Muslim issues. And I do not necessarily concur that you are pouring the values of our nation when you can't even, when you believe that there are people in our country that are perverse, and where you think that you create different categories of Americans and their obligations when it comes to condemning of violence. I'll have another round, but thank you.
Senator Cory Booker, that the absurdity of that last statement just struck me. How can you be Secretary of State when you believe that some people, Americans, are perverse? Really, none are. I let's go to the prisons, or let's go to, you know, let's just monitor the screens late at night in many households and see what kind of perversion there is. You know, so that's kind of silly. But of course, they were setting Mike Pompeo up because this, in fact, as a matter of fact, there are Democratic senators who are now campaigning against him because of that exchange on the whole issue of homosexuality and same-sex marriage. Kathy's concerned that we have defended Mike Pompeo wrongly, that he actually had a chance and he failed. Kathy, I guess I disagree with you. You know, when you listen to what Mike just said, he said, I had a very clear view when I was a politician, and I stand by that. And then he said, I continue to hold that view. I'm telling you, when you are in a situation like this, this is a trap that they're trying to lay. And I was concerned, be honest with you, that I don't know Mike Pompeo that well, that he would say, oh, I can't believe I didn't really say that, or I've changed my views, or I've evolved, or whatever. That's what most people do. But he didn't do that. He said, I stand by that. I continue to hold that view. He said it two different ways. And then when he was asked point blank if he thought homosexuality was a perversion, which is what Cory Booker asked him, he, I believe, rightly responded by saying, I treat people equally, because that is really the point. This is a hearing on whether he should be Secretary of State of the United States of America, not whether he should be the head of Centers for Disease Control or anything related to the act of homosexuality. That was he knew that there was a trap being set for him. I don't think he equivocated. I think he gave an honest answer without falling into the trap, although, you know, they're still using it against him. And I, you know, and the precedents for this, Kathy, would be, you think about Jesus himself. Now, when he was asked some very hard questions, he often did not answer, give straight answers. I could give you a whole bunch of examples. I'll just give you one. Remember, Pilate said, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And Jesus just said, "You've said it. You have said. That's basically what he responded. There were a lot of times when he was asked hard questions and he either didn't respond or he gave some answer that seemed to have nothing to do with the question. So that's a way that Jesus dealt with questions that were given to him to set him up. So I don't view that as, I view that as smart. You ask about, I guess I don't remember saying he was persecuted in that situation, but you remember that, so I'll address that. You know, persecution, you mentioned, she also mentions to me Fox's Book of Martyrs, which I love that book about the people that were put to death over their faith. I don't like the stories, you know, but I love the courage and the incredible faith that's demonstrated through that book. So persecution, of course, can take that form. It can be a violent death or murder, but persecution can take another form because before people become the objects of murder and torture, they become the objects of ridicule. They lose jobs. They're fined. They're varying stages, and I've seen all these stages. I've seen them in China and North Korea. I've seen them in Russia where people are made to be worthless. They can't get jobs. This is a case. So I'm just saying, on the spectrum of persecution, this is certainly part of it, Kathy. This is where a man who, you know, has spent his career preparing and working and equipped to do all these great things, and yet can't get the job because he has said that gay sex is a perversion and he doesn't embrace same-sex marriage. That's that litmus test in itself, if it prevents him from getting the job, is persecution. Yeah, so, I mean, do you have any idea how vitriolic and wicked the radical left is? So that if you speak up on something like that, like he did, you become the object of unbelievable harassment, torment, and sometimes, I would say sometimes, danger. So it doesn't have to be physical threat to be persecution. And I believe Mike was persecuted in the broad sense of the term. I believe a lot of us, you know, even though I'm with you. I don't want to complain about silly things, about light things, because I figure it's going to get a lot worse. But, you know, many of us have had some rough bumps because of our convictions on things. That's just part of the trade of being a sold out follower of Jesus. And I'm sure Mike Pompeo knows that. Now, look, I don't know Mike Pompeo personally, and I can't vouch for everything that he's ever done and said. I don't claim to be an expert, so we'll have to see how he does. But I would say that in that exchange, I think that when he said, I treat everyone the same, that is the point. In a hearing like that, when he's being considered as Secretary of State, the point is not whether he thinks gay marriage should be legalized or whether he thought it should have been legalized. The point is, as the boss, how will you treat people? That is the point. That is the nut of the thing. And I think he answered it very well. I'm sorry that you were so disappointed, but I hope that that helps, Kathy, because we appreciate your support. And I would really hate to lose you as a listener or have you be disappointed in us. So I wanted to take that time to kind of explain it. All right. Well, there's more news. I want to talk to you about the Jim Jordan race. I want to talk to you about the push to now give legalization to illegal immigrants again by Paul Ryan. Again, it's amazing. It's like his last gift to us before he leaves. So I'll talk about that in just a second. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Your eyes have seen my unformed substance, and in your book were written all the days that were ordained for me, when as yet there was not one of them. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Tennessee Governor Bill Haslam has signed a bill which allows them to bar TennCare, Tennessee's Medicaid program, from giving money to any abortion facility. In the wake of having given Planned Parenthood nearly $1 million over the last 6 years, Tennessee has now moved to defund the baby murder machine. Funds that were once directed toward abortions will now be given to other health care providers. Folks, the tide is turning.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner, or visit the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Exposing Washington with Walker Wildman.
So who is responsible for the dysfunction in Washington? That's what we're going to be discussing today.
We have become one of the most litigious societies on the planet.
The goal of this show is to bring clarity to the news coming out of Washington, D.C., and to expose the deception that has plagued our nation's capital for decades.
Exposing Washington.
Each Saturday at 2:30 p.m. Central.
On American Family Radio.
He was talking about the gospel to the entire nation. How did that happen?
Focal Point, making the issues clear.
It happened because he was willing to take a stand for biblical morality on the issue of homosexuality and marriage. What opened the door for the proclamation of the gospel? That's why you cannot separate these things.
Focal Point with Brian Fisher, weekdays from 1 till 3 Central.
Sheila from Tennessee attended one of the town hall meetings hosted by Dan Celia. She left thinking about different ways to handle her finances.
Dan Celia spoke a lot about tithing and being faithful to the Lord, and I definitely intend on getting in on this charitable gift annuity, which I've never done, but it sounds so exciting. Listening to him in there, it made me reevaluate my way of spending money, my way of doing, and it shows you that a little bit can go a long way when you place it in the Master's hands. So what we need to do, and what I intend on doing, is taking the little bit and making it be worth much for the Lord.
Find out if a charitable gift annuity from the AFA Foundation is right for you at 800-326-4543, extension 345. That's 800-326-4543, extension 345, or email foundation@afa.net.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. In 2016, the American people elected a president who promised to return to the practice Ronald Reagan called peace through strength. They were responding to the appalling failures of the Obama administration's national security policies. Donald Trump's victory was also a popular rejection of the prospect of more of the same under Mr. Obama's first Secretary of State. Mr. Trump has now nominated Mike Pompeo as his second Secretary of State. His life experience as a top-of-his-class graduate of West Point and distinguished service as an Army officer and director of the Central Intelligence Agency equips him brilliantly to pursue peace through strength. It would be regrettable if those who lost in 2016 caused such a man's nomination to be spurned today in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Fortunately, it seems likely the full Senate will agree with the winner. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Hey, how about some good news this morning? Anybody want any good news? I see those hands. All right, so a birth of a baby from Kensington Palace about maybe 40 minutes ago. Her Royal Highness, the Duchess of Cambridge, was safely delivered of a son. The baby weighed 8 pounds, 7 ounces. The Duke of Cambridge was present for the birth. Her Royal Highness and her child are both doing well. Is that cool or what? Two little boys and one girl. And they are so cute. I have to say, I'm not a royal watcher, but kind of maybe I am because I sort of like this. It's fun and it's refreshing. And there's nothing better than the birth of a baby, right? All right. Well, while we were sleeping, things were happening down on the southern border. Let's listen.
They have arrived. A group of about 50 Central American migrants have reportedly reached the U.S. border at Tijuana, Mexico, seeking asylum. Of those, about 10 have reportedly turned themselves into U.S. authorities. Now, the so-called migrant caravan has mostly shrunk and dispersed under pressure from Mexican authorities and President Trump, who called in National Guard troops to help secure the border. The caravan left the Guatemala-Mexico border in late March and grew to more than 1,000 migrants who found safety traveling in numbers. Some of the asylum seekers say they are fleeing gang violence in Honduras, El Salvador, and Guatemala. But in order to gain asylum, they must demonstrate they have suffered persecution or fear that they will suffer persecution due to five factors: race, religion, nationality, membership in a particular social group, or political opinion. Organizers of the caravan claim people are being turned away from the U.S. illegally, while demonstrators say we shouldn't turn anyone away.
They deserve to have the right to asylum, and we as a country should be meeting them with open arms instead of with the National Guard and with more guns at the border. As they are coming here fleeing violence to ask for asylum, which is a human right and a right that all immigrants have.
And more migrants will reportedly be arriving in the coming days.
So there you go. Now that caravan was something like 1,500 people. Much was made of it. They were sort of like thumbing their nose in the face of our laws and of this president. And you remember that the president sent a National Guard to the border because we weren't sure exactly how that was going to play. So the first of them have gotten across the border. And I read they're coming across the United States to turn themselves in from Tijuana and request asylum. So that's what's happening on the southern border. That's all I know for right now. I'm sure there'll be more as we listen throughout this day. But that reminds me of what I was prepared to talk to you about this morning. This is an article by Conservative HQ, and the title is Paul Ryan's Parting Gift to America: Amnesty for Illegal Aliens. Just when you thought the push to make American citizens out of millions of illegal aliens was dead, it has come roaring back to life in the form of House Resolution 774. Which will be part of H.R. 4760, a bill to amend the immigration laws and the homeland security laws through what is known as, on Capitol Hill, as Queen of the Hill process. It's being proposed by Representative Jeff Denham of California, who's very much a rhino, pro-open borders congressman, a Republican. And the way this works is, you know what, you don't need to know. The reason they call it Queen of the Hill is because they're going to present a number of bills, and whichever bill gets the most votes passes. It's kind of a ruse. It's really a way to get through what they want, and what they want is amnesty. In fact, CHQ says the real plan is for Speaker Ryan to put his amnesty bill up and arm twist Republicans into passing it. And then they go through the history of Paul Ryan, which I have over and over repeated to you, his partnership with Luis Gutierrez, the socialist communist from Chicago, congressman who's for open borders. He's a rabid leftist. Paul Ryan went on a speaking tour with him trying to get amnesty passed. I don't know what year that was. Not that long ago. And so this is what he tracks. So this is okay, and this is another thing that I had forgotten. When Paul Ryan's 2016 primary opponent made the speaker's support for expanding immigration and amnesty for illegal aliens issues in the campaign, Ryan blanketed the district with mailers touting his opposition to both, a claim that was demonstrably false given Ryan's record and his statements during his love fest with illegal alien advocate Illinois Congressman Luis Gutierrez. So, here's the practical thing about this. It's called the Queen of the Hill resolution. That's where they're going to present a bunch of immigration bills, and the one with the most votes will pass. And it's, of course, this is not a stretch. This is what Paul Ryan wants. This is not a secret. And so this is an effort to once again pass immigration reform. Again, his parting gift to us as he leaves. And this is the way it's been, by the way, under his leadership. It really is disgraceful. So Conservative HQ then lists all the congressmen who have signed on to this, to Jeff Denham's Queen of the Hill resolution. And what I'm going to do is put this article on our Facebook page. Again, it's Conservative HQ. It's Paul Ryan's Parting Gift to America: Amnesty for Illegal Aliens. And at the end of the article, it lists every single congressman who signed on to this. And the point is that you should call your congressman. If you're, and there's some good guys on here. You should call them and tell them, no way. In fact, you can look at the article and it will equip you with the better words than what I'm saying so that you can make your message concise. That reminds me, of course, of the speaker's race, which is, look, nothing is declared yet. I will say this, that Congressman Jim Jordan has said that he will, if they ask, he will run for speaker. We know that Kevin McCarthy and, Steve Scalise have been in the news about this job, but my last word on Steve Scalise was that he would yield to McCarthy, which maybe that will work and maybe it won't. Because I'm not sure, you know, this is a inside the house deal where they trade off and they make deals and all of that. So no one has any idea of what's going on in there except people that are actually working in there. But Steve Scalise and Kevin McCarthy both voted on the omnibus bill. They are known among conservative members of Congress as guys who have whipped for whatever the leadership wants. And I would say a lot of it has to do with sleight of hand, saying one thing and doing another. And I'll give you a really good example of this. This is another article of Conservative HQ. It's just so well worded, I have to read it to you. It's about defunding Planned Parenthood. We've referred to the Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, as Democratic Speaker Paul Ryan because even though he ran as a Republican, his policy goals have more often aligned with Democrats like Nancy Pelosi, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Adam Schiff, and Chuck Schumer than they have with President Trump and the conservatives of the House Freedom Caucus. Case in point, Ryan's failure to produce on pro-life legislation. For years, Capitol Hill establishment Republicans have been running on defending Planned Parenthood. And we recall that when establishment loser Mitt Romney was the GOP presidential nominee apparent and was casting about for a running mate, one of Paul Ryan's selling points was that he was, quote, pro-life, end quote. Fast forward to Ryan's Draft Me for Speaker campaign, and once again, his allegedly pro-life stand helped him to overcome the last bit of hesitancy among conservatives. Boy, was that a mistake. In the almost 3 years that Ryan has been Speaker, Planned Parenthood has been regularly funded, and little has been done to rein in the slaughter in Planned Parenthood's abortion abattoirs. But help may be on the way in the person of Ohio Representative Jim Jordan. Unlike Paul Ryan, Kevin McCarthy, Steve Scalise, and the rest of the existing establishment Republicans, Jordan has not been compromised by voting to give our tax dollars to the baby killers of Planned Parenthood. He's been a passionate advocate for unborn babies. He was one of only 24 Republicans who voted against the omnibus spending bill, in part because it included taxpayer funds for Planned Parenthood. LifeSite News, by the way, has a whole article on this as well. In 2015, Jordan was one of the lawmakers who questioned Planned Parenthood's then CEO Cecile Richards about selling aborted baby body parts. And this is what he said. Without going into all of it, you recall that the counterpunch against David Dalyden's videos was that supposedly he had one frame in there it was an actual fetus from a different procedure, not from Planned Parenthood. That was the technicality upon which they went after David Dalyden and accused the whole thing of being false, which it wasn't. So this is what Jim Jordan asks Cecile Richards. If the videos were selectively edited, if this was entrapment, all untrue, then why did you apologize? And Richards refused to give an answer to that. So, of course, Paul Ryan keeps saying he can't pass it because there aren't enough votes in the Senate. This is what Jim Jordan had to say. No wonder Americans hate this place. No wonder they're cynical. This ticks me off. There's just no other way to say it. And more importantly, it ticks off the American people, and it should. Jordan then asked if Republicans would get back to doing what they told voters they would do, or are we going to keep doing pretend things like this? I'm telling you, this guy, Jim Jordan, he's our kind of guy. He's straight. He shoots straight. He speaks the truth, and he takes the licks. You know, he was a wrestling coach. I guess he knows how to fight, and he knows how to take, you know, pull the punches. There are a lot of organizations jumping on the bandwagon for encouraging Jim Jordan to run. Let's see, Tea Party Patriots. They point out that he was founding chairman of the House Freedom Caucus, and he's always fighting for conservative solutions, even when it's against his own party's leadership. Gun Owners of America weigh in on Jim Jordan's record on guns, which I can't go into, but as opposed to Kevin McCarthy, who I think they gave him a 20% rating on his gun Yeah, I can't find it, but it's not a good rating. Jordan has an A rating. Oh, McCarthy has a D. So that gives you an idea. There's kind of some momentum in that particular area. I wanted to bring you up to date on some of the investigations. I'm just going to do it this way. Devin Nunez appeared yesterday and explained one of the – this is a big development. So let me just let Devin, Congressman Nunez, explain this, and then I'll have a minute at the end to talk about it. Let's listen.
So it took us a long time to actually get this, what's called the electronic communication, as we know it now for your viewers. What that is it's the original intelligence, the original reasons that the counterintelligence investigation was started. Now, this is really important to us because a counterintelligence investigation uses the tools of our intelligence services that are not supposed to be used on American citizens. So we've long wanted to know, well, what intelligence did you have that actually led to this investigation? So what we found now, after the investigators had reviewed it, is that, in fact, there was no intelligence. So we have a traditional partnership with what's called the Five Eyes Agreement. Five Eyes Agreement involves our friends in Australia, New Zealand, the United Kingdom, Canada, and, of course, us. So long time process and procedures in place where we move intelligence across. We are not supposed to spy on each other's citizens. And it's worked well, and it continues to work well. And we know it's working well because there was no intelligence that passed from Five Eyes through the Five Eyes channels to our government. And that's why we had to see that original communication. So now we're trying to figure out, as you know, we are investigating the State Department. We think there's some major irregularities at the State Department, and we're trying to figure out how it is that this information about Mr. Papadopoulos, of all people, who was supposedly meeting with some folks in London, how that made it over across into the FBI's hands. We know a little bit about that because of what some of the State Department officials themselves have said about that. So we were glad to get this behind us, but now, of course, as we peel another piece back, it leaves more unanswered questions, which we're trying to get to the bottom of.
Congressman Devin Nunez, and that, boy, that's interesting now. So the bottom is they're trying to figure out, why did you open this investigation on Donald Trump and alleged collusion? Where did this come from? If it didn't come from our intelligence agencies and our intelligence partnerships overseas, where did this come from? How come it just suddenly ended up at the FBI and State Department? What's going on? And I'm telling you, I smell John Brennan in this issue, but I'm sure his name will come up in due time again. Meanwhile, Michael Goodwin has written an interesting article saying Democrats are getting desperate as Mueller stalls. So the DNC, by the way, Democratic National Committee, filed a lawsuit against President Trump's campaign, Russia, and WikiLeaks on Friday night about this alleged collusion. And Michael Goodwin's point is they're only doing that because they see Mueller's prosecution falling apart. There just isn't anything there. Trump has said he's innocent all along. There's nothing. There's no collusion. And I think Bob Mueller can't find it. And I think they're getting desperate. It's also interesting, isn't it, that Rod Rosenstein and James Comey now are snipping at each other, accusing each other of lying? The thing just seems to be falling apart. And I listen, it should. Because truth should prevail and justice should be done, whichever way that falls. And so there you go. But the lawsuit was filed Friday night. Of course, if they get some wacky judge, it'll have legs and go on, and they'll carry this thing through the election, which is what they're trying to do. But the games go on. But it seems to me, that God is sort of interjecting himself. And why do I say that? Because he's the God of justice, and he brings justice where men are helpless to do it. This is Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.